Hey, welcome back. This is the Coaches Rising podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today by Jeff Graber, a beautiful soul. And we are going to be talking today about Jeff's work coaching high-level CEOs, executives, and leaders. Jeff is the co-founder of Evolution, which is a very successful coaching firm working around the world and heavily in Silicon Valley. Jeff is also the creator of Evolutionary Business, which is a framework around conscious business and leadership that he uses with his clients. So we'll talk today about why do his clients come to him? What is the nature of the work that he's doing? Why does he combine the outer work and the inner work? And what role does he see business being able to play to transform our world in these times? So just a few more words about Jeff. He spent 15 years as an operator and investor. He launched the first video game company in China with EA. He was leading Yahoo Games and then founded three companies, starting his career in venture capital. He is working with leaders, founders, executives at companies like Slack, Notion, and Snap. You can find his work on Evolutionary Business at Substack. So that all being said, let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Jeff Graber. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. So Jeff, yeah, great to be with you today. And I've had the delight of getting to know you more over the recent months. So that makes me even more excited to have you as a guest on our podcast today. How are you doing right now?
Great. I feel honored to be here with you. You're doing amazing work in the world, and I'm, you know, grateful and honored. And I think it's very important that I have this opportunity to share, you know, not just with you personally, which is so valuable, but also hopefully with some other people that might hear this who don't know me and don't know, I don't know them, and expand our relationships. So that's it's wonderful. I'm doing well today. Thank you.
Yeah, cool.
because we've had very expansive conversations about evolutionary business and coaching. And so I think we'll go to quite a few places today. You founded one of the kind of the most well-known or primary coaching firms in the US, Evolution, or deeply respected. And we've had Matt as a guest as well on the podcast. So maybe that's a good question. Could you just share a little bit about what you do, as a coach and with Evolution?
Sure, yes. I personally work primarily with founders and CEOs and other leaders as well of technology startups that are growing fast, scale-ups as folks call them here in Europe, that are typically have raised a lot of capital and have found product market fit and are really growing rapidly. They've raised a lot of capital. They're wanting to continue to create what they started with in terms of the vision for their business of being impactful. And they're starting to normally feel a little bit shaky about that because their team is growing and the opportunity they can see is very large, but they realize it's a difficult thing to do. And so that's often the time I come in to work with companies and support the individuals. And mostly that's what I do today, though I also do work sometimes with teams and the organization more broadly. And my work as a coach is, I think, a little unusual compared to many other coaches in that it's as much advisory as it is introspective support for leaders. And that's bringing my own experience as a founder, as an exec, into the work I do. But I do it from the coach's perspective, the coach's kind of mindset of I'm being of service, I'm supporting them to come up with the best decisions they can. But I do believe in bringing my own viewpoints from my own personal experience individually as a leader, as well as a coach with many other founders over the last 20 years. So, and in that way, I'd say, strategy and structure and governance, these things all play a key role. I'm a little bit more like a board member than I am a typical coach, but with a much better, closer relationship than is often the case from board members and founders. And yeah, I can talk about Evolution as well, which is that it's similar, but I'd say the real key thing is the breadth of the work, and then as well as the depth of that we bring into our clients is really the unique factor. And probably Matt talked about that. I know he's on here a few years ago and explaining about that. And I think that's really what's needed for companies these days and leaders and teams.
We will go much more, much deeper into the things you're sharing. But just one question I want to ask is, do you think that that's something when you're coaching the founders and CEOs of these fast-growing companies that actually they really need? It's not just the introspective work, but it is the, advisory support, the strategic support as well, that, that combination is a real must at that level.
100%. Some are much more experienced than others. So some founders who are maybe in their very first working experience, they've come up with an idea when they were young and maybe in school, and they're building their business and have never had another kind of job before, have really a limited understanding of what I would consider to be basics of conventional business around how to run a meeting or how to hire somebody, et cetera, et cetera. And others have done it many times or they're much more experienced. And so they need different kinds of advisory support, perhaps around organizational design or fundraising or about taking a company public and how what they might do and all that. And I'd say, whether it's me or somebody else or both really is what I would suggest, getting that kind of guidance is really important. It's certainly as important as the deep work. They're both important. We can't do one or the other in my experience. We have to really support people in both of those areas. And whether it's a coach doing it all or a coach and a mentor and an advisor or some other groups of people, that's what I think leaders need.
Yeah. I think let's start with the story you shared with me that you thought would be good to bring in as a kind of like inquiry, and we've had this kind of reflection a little bit in the past in different ways. But it's, could you share, you know, the story you shared with me with coaches coming in at Facebook and your sense of that? And then we can connect that to evolutionary business and then the things you just shared about the work you do. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, maybe just a little background anecdote. I had my first coach when I was working at Yahoo. I was actually had sat in a leadership development program, and Fred Kaufman came and did a two-day workshop with us on what he called then courageous leadership. And it was really amazing for me because I had no experience with this type of thing before. I had done therapy, I had done men's work, and then to be exposed to this type of introspective programming in a business setting was really unusual for me. And I was quite, you know, blown away by it. I had never connected the dots. And so I had a coach then, a great guy named Albert, for the first time after that at Yahoo, and it really woke me up. I was the person who needed coaching more than anybody else I've ever met. I was just absolutely clueless about leadership and about how to work with other people. My viewpoint was it was all about just ideas and like being resilient and working through adversity and making those things happen, pure will and very individualized and hopeful that other people would just kind of come along and do what they needed to do. And I even said to somebody once, when am I ever going to get any work done? All I do is spend my time managing up, down, and across. And of course, that was my job as I was running Yahoo Games at the time. And anyway, I was clueless. So I needed coaching very badly. It really woke me up and kind of drove me in this direction. And that was more than 20 years ago now. And I was sitting in this Fred Kaufman workshop and I'm next to Dave Goldberg, who was the head of Yahoo Music, unfortunately passed away a number of years ago. And I asked him at the end, I said, I was so excited. I said, Dave, wasn't that amazing? And he's like, not really for me. But my wife, Sheryl Sandberg, who was at Google at the time, he's like, she would love it. And he went and told Sheryl, and Sheryl reached out to Fred, and Fred and Axiolent went into Google and did a lot of work with Sheryl's team there right after that. And then when Sheryl went to Facebook, I can't remember exactly what year, maybe 2008 or 9 or somewhere in that range. And, you know, the idea was she was going to be the adult in the room with Zuckerberg and the rest of his, you know, kind of younger hacking kind of move fast and break things guys. She brought, as far as I know, Fred, but certainly Axiolent into Facebook at the time. And you know, Facebook beyond that started doing a lot of coaching. They brought in an internal group and hired many coaches to come and work there. And I think many great ones. I don't know, of course, all of them, but I know a number who worked there, and they're wonderful coaches, excellent, deep and powerful coaches. And I thought it was great that Facebook did this, of course. And, you know, the question though I ask is, let's take a look at the company today, now called Meta. And certainly they've been incredibly successful from a conventional perspective, right? They're one of the most valuable companies in terms of the value of their stock price and how much revenue and profit they make. And, you know, perhaps we can attribute part of that to the success of the coaching they did around helping leaders be more effective in their leading of teams and people and help people be better at making decisions and many other things that we do as coaches. I think that it's possible that the coaching worked very well. But then let's look at the other aspects of the company and the knowing harm that that company has caused, the algorithm that, you know, addicts people and especially children and has caused really clear, you know, harm to many people and maybe society as a whole, many people would say, or the election interference or what they did in Myanmar with the elections and the mass murders there. And it's really a pretty terrible situation. And so we have to wonder, it's like, is coaching doing really what it needs to do? Is it doing enough? And I think that's a very basic question we should ask ourselves as coaches. I ask myself regularly, and frankly, I'm not very satisfied yet with the answers I can give, which is, I love helping individuals. I love helping them help their teams. I love helping them make their companies feel more human and humane inside and them feel more effective in what they're doing. And, you know, most founders bring like very high, lofty intentions to their work in the world. And I like helping them to achieve those. But at the end of the day, Meta is not the only example of a company that's gone that route. It's just a big one. Coaching has been a part of many technology companies over the last 20 years. And yet, you know, there's a lot of people who think that the tech companies are evil or certainly aren't doing good, a lot of good in the world. And I can argue both sides of this, and I think it's important to, but I certainly think we as coaches need to really deeply consider this and ask ourselves, are we doing all we can? Is there something else we could do? What else do we need in our society and in business to change things, to improve them? Because at least for me, I'm not at all satisfied.
What comes up for you when you ask those questions? Like, are coaches doing enough? Could we be doing more? What more do you think coaches could be doing?
Again, I'm not satisfied with my answers personally yet because I feel like it's a very difficult situation. And there's a lot of reasons for that are, you know, personal for me, but I think, you know, would be relatable to others that I can get into. But just to answer your question as directly as possible, I think the biggest issue is around the systems and structures of business. I think that conventional business is in a certain state. It's been in this state for really moving more and more into it over the last 50 years, roughly. And it's really almost at its apex now. We can see how fast, well, I hope it's the apex. It's because it's the apex of conventional business, like success and speed and impact and influence. And it's also the nadir of our society, perhaps. I hope it is. I hope we're going to, you know, find a shift here soon. But it's the time when business is very clearly about one thing, and it's about growth, no matter what. It's about profits, because that's what the investors need to feel like they're getting a return. It's really about those investors' returns. And we can talk about that too, because I don't blame them necessarily for what their part is in this. But the point is business as we know it and see it today is broken, and especially at scale. And yet that's where we do most of our work, is in businesses at scale. And so can we play a role in supporting a change? And how could we do that? And this is the part that personally I have trouble with. I'm like, I've been doing this, but I don't feel like enough of a change yet. And so, you know, I'm really at the point of wanting to explore that and push on that more personally with my clients, but also with other, you know, coaches, whether inside Evolution or out, and with other leaders, business leaders who are feeling similarly and want to do something more, not just make money over here and then, you know, be a good charitable donor over there. I think we need to find ways of integrating all this.
Yeah, it's a very complex topic, isn't it? Because yeah. It's so systemic, and you know, there's where do you start? Where's the acupressure point that could actually, yeah, you know, enact this kind of real change that feels like, you know, I think everybody listening would feel like, yeah, you know, it's obvious we need new ways of new values, you know, inside of our businesses and societies that create a sense of sustainability and good for all. And I've kind of thought about this myself, just with a couple of reflections, like, you know, there's this sense of the times we find ourselves in being, I think, important, because it feels like, as you've said, like, are we at the apex? You know, it's like, if you look at systemic change, this is the good news about today. I think when systems get perturbed, you know, that, as Marvin Oka was talking about on the podcast, that you know, it feels disturbing, yeah, and that's what we're in right now. It's uncomfortable. It's uncertain. It's kind of scary as well, mm-hmm, because everything that was familiar is up. You could kind of relate this to personal change, but that those very conditions are what make it change more possible.
Exactly.
You know, second order kind of change. So it's like no coincidence that you're asking these questions right now, because I think, you know, it's kind of loud, isn't it, that we need something new. And so I wonder about the role of a coach, because it, on one hand, it could seem like, well, a coach is just like one person, you know, an individual in this huge systemic kind of sea of different competing values and core principles. But anyway, like, I do think a role of a coach, or at least I've reflected on, like, being a more of a provocateur, or at least having one foot in the system and one foot, you know, in what is emerging next, and being able to offer deeper reflections to clients. And I think right now clients are probably more susceptible, more open to these kind of deeper considerations. But I don't know that for sure. It's difficult to say anything with certainty. Do you? So, I mean, maybe you could just riff on what I shared, and we could start to talk about, do you find that you're meeting more clients who are considering these deeper questions and values inside of what they create? Or is it kind of like business as usual and things are just still going really fast? And will it take something breaking in order to kind of bring that change?
I hope it doesn't take the kind of break societally that it often takes individually, personally, for somebody to change. I really hope it doesn't. That's my great hope, is that the change can be more gentle, right? When I pray for help, I always pray for it to be, you know, subtle, so it's not too disruptive to my life. Because I know what that feels like, right? And many of us do. And that's, you know, partly that's how I got here, and I think many others. And the thing about the people I work with is, of course, that first of all, I find almost universally, I guess I should say, they're wonderful, lovely people, humans, brilliant, doing incredible things that really, they really care. They care about other people. They care about the work they're doing, the business is doing. The ones who are most successful, I find have the hardest time connecting the pieces between their humanity and the success of their business. And the ones who are most connected have the least success with their businesses.
Just if I get that, so the ones that are most connected to their inner sense of meaning and their hearts.
Less of a sense of meaning. I would say their sense of humanity and caring about people and society at a deeper level, and concerned about the potential negative impacts of their actions, are unfortunately, they're lovely people, but they're also unfortunately the least successful of the types of people I've worked with. Because they aren't ruthless when they need to be. They're caring about how other people feel, to the point where it sometimes creates indecision or a lack of leadership, a sense of leadership amongst the team or in the market. And even the ones who are pretty strong and clear, there's often another leader and company out there that's even stronger and more ruthless that can beat them in the market. I've seen that happen. And so it's been interesting. I'm working more and more with leaders who are stronger, but who are still caring people. And I like that. I personally think I've moved actually in that way. My daughters would certainly say so, having teenage daughters. And I think that's what it takes. I think we need to meet business where it is a little bit more than often we do as coaches. And so that's where I'm trying to go, is to meet them where they are and bring them along in a pathway that I think can be better than if they were doing it alone. And what I mean by that is to push back pretty hard when I start noticing in our interactions a lack of attention to things other than the, you know, what would be successful conventionally in a company, meaning growth, say profits, say people following directions, all the things that we, you know, would normally say, oh, that's fine, right? Business is, it's normal, you know, and investors certainly want those things. But to me, that's usually the beginning of a pathway that's not going to be the ideal and not usually who they are when they started their business, actually, is what I found.
Do you find there's an, like, this is where it gets tricky. Like, is there an ethical piece to this where, because you just said, you know, like the people who are like least connected to their hearts or whatever, however we want to phrase that, you know, themselves, they're more ruthless. They're the ones who have the most success, and the people, you know, vice versa. So, you know, I'm hearing you say like you're pushing back hard on people who maybe are going down that route of ruthlessness. Mm-hmm. And you know, do you need to put a disclaimer on that, basically saying like, hey, you know, these guys, the ruthless guys and you know, gals, that the people, they're the ones who are succeeding the most. Like, or is there a case here for, no, actually there's a third way. There's a third way, and there are people out there who are blending, or, you know, maybe transcending and including. There's a way of leadership which brings success and care and meaning.
I hope, I believe that's what I'm, you know, looking for and trying to support and do myself, for that matter, right? This is one of the hardest things, is the integration of those two parts. It's much easier to go one and go back and forth between them. And that's what I find myself and others doing, and companies themselves, where there's a leader who has both but hasn't integrated, that the company, it's Jekyll and Hyde in some ways. And it doesn't usually work very well, unfortunately. There's limits to how well that works. The ones that are purely kind of orange and spiral dynamics or modern kind of conventional businesses, it's much easier for them to be successful than the ones that have a lot of the postmodern kind of green energy to them. And the ones that are very green really struggle. You know, they end up looking like poorly run parent-teacher organizations at a public school or a nonprofit. And I think this is where you start seeing the failures in these companies, even when there's great ideas, great product market fit, brilliant, you know, vision in the founders. That's where I see them struggling over the longer term with success. And so, yes, when I do my work, you know, what I like to say is, you know, they can't just be conscious, and we can't just be conscious. That's just the starting point. Consciousness is the starting point. It is not the end point. This is my belief. It's conscientiousness as well. We have to have consciousness and conscientiousness or care or some moral beliefs and standing for what we think. And it, to me, it really goes to, what is the purpose of business, or at least your business? What's the purpose of your business? And so I work with founders with great purpose, great missions, as much as possible. And, you know, certainly individually and for their business, and as much as possible, all of those things integrated. Yet, when they're trying to make something of massive scale, of large impact and influence, there's a real tension there because of what the business world and how it's structured looks like and works like, especially when there's investors involved who have only one goal, which is to get a return on their investment. And again, I don't care how nice the people are or the pension fund or whatever it is that's backing them cares about. The purpose of that money is only to make more money. And so once you have that involved, it's extremely difficult then to thread this needle. I believe it is entirely possible, what you said, to integrate these pieces. I do think it can take longer. It's going to look different. And we haven't seen many examples of that. I can tell you of a company here where I live in the Basque Country called Mondragon, which is a cooperative. It has about 70,000 employees. It's the sixth largest company in Spain, though it's not a company. And it was started by a Jesuit priest in the post-war years to help out a small industrial town here. And now it's a broad company with banking and groceries and other things. And, you know, it's not perfect, of course, but it's a company that looks very different from others. First of all, it's a cooperative, which is not a typical structure that's easy to fund and to scale. But it's owned and led by all of its workers, as they call themselves, everybody involved, through democracy and representative democracy, elections, ownership. Everybody has ownership. And I think these kinds of things are what we need to have built into companies, and just that and more. But it really starts with this fundamental question of, what's the purpose? If the purpose is simply to make a return for your shareholders, then there's only one direction for the company to go. And, you know, they might do something to help a particular group, like that helps that end goal, like Starbucks really giving a lot in the early days to their baristas to help them feel like part of the company, call them partners, et cetera. But that's really the main focus that they had there. And eventually, of course, even that started fading as they hit scale because it wasn't enough by itself when we're working in a conventional landscape. So to your question, what can we do as coaches? Should I make a disclaimer? Probably even more so than I do. I try to do it a little more subtly because I want to meet them where they are. And I work with people who are aligned with my worldviews. So they have some idea of what they're getting into when they start working with me. I'm not going to just go out there and give them a playbook for how to, you know, destroy the planet and, you know, run over anybody that gets in their way. That's not the kind of coach I am. I hope there's not many coaches like that out there.
Well, I do too. Yeah, in a sense, like there's this issue of like the wider systemic influences on, you know, particularly businesses that want to scale quickly and rapidly, a lot huge scale. So I'm thinking of, then you mentioned this example in Spain. I'm thinking of, you know, Patagonia is an example that's often given, which, you know, has been around for a long time, and you could probably say it grew more slowly than it could have. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, its kind of commitment to its principles has now become like one of its defining features. So
exactly.
So maybe we can kind of like zoom in a little bit on the work you do with mm-hmm. the people you coach. What, you know, you've talked about purpose as being a key principle or aspect of, you know, an evolutionary business, and we could maybe use that term evolutionary leader. So what do you find yourself, I mean, this is a very big question, and I'll let you take us where you feel it's like most important to go first, because I'm sure we could actually do 5 podcasts on, you know, everything you do. But what's important with what you do with these businesses and leaders to help them, you know, have this kind of performance, which is, yeah, they're performing as a business, but they're also, they've got a soul, or they've got this sense of purpose.
I think that's it. And again, I just want to start off by saying I wish I could have done more already. This is, you know, one of the things that when you asked me to come on this podcast, I thought is, oh, this is an opportunity to really, I don't want to just say recommit. I've not lost a commitment. Double down, go stronger into my commitment to this work as something that's, you know, my purpose for life, and that I, you know, discovered 20 years ago, sitting on a rock on an island in Croatia, and, you know, had this awareness. I'm not the first person to have this awareness. It just happened to hit me then. And I decided to make this my life's work. And I found my way into coaching as a related way in to supporting the work and my family, and, you know, finding a way to have enough for myself and my family has always been a big challenge as part of this. And that question for all of us, I think, is a very important question. And for business, is what is enough? Because I think that's something that is very slippery. You know, it's always just a little more would be better, and just a little more. And it's like a gas that just takes up whatever space it's in. It will just keep expanding. And it's very hard to say, no, this is really enough. And some of us are better at it than others. It's hard for me, especially as a 7 on the Enneagram, for there's always something else. living, you know, kind of getting into this work and helping others as part of the work is to think about something as fundamental as that, to me, is a key thing. And you know, the other side is really being courageous and taking bold steps and putting myself or putting yourself out there to do something different that's against the norms that might not be appreciated, and certainly not by the mainstream, is another thing. And how to do this effectively. And this is where I say, gosh, I wish I have done better. I'd say evolution as a firm has been relatively interesting as a, you know, kind of some examples of steps in this direction, but it's very small, right, compared to other companies. Patagonia, we put it as the beacon on the hill or whatever, the North Star, but it's a pretty small company. It doesn't have nearly the impact and influence that I wish it did. I kind of think I would push them if I worked with them to figure out how to have more. They have a fair amount, but they could have much more, in my opinion. They stopped letting the VCs and other companies, you know, use their gear to put their logos on as gifts, because they didn't want to have the association with, you know, that in those industries or those people. That would have been a great opportunity for them to say, oh, you can keep doing this, but you have to come to our headquarters for a day and we're going to do a workshop with you on what makes Patagonia special. And, you know, something like this, right? These are the kind of things that if you're, it depends on what kind of business you are, right? If your business isn't just about whatever the main product is or service is, but it's about fundamentally being of service as broadly and impactfully as possible, which is really what evolutionary business is about, right? It's really, and it starts with the individual. So me individually, my personal responsibility, I think, is to be of maximal service to other people. Starts with myself. I have to do it for myself, which is one of the reasons I love coaching, because coaching really helps me do that. While I'm working, I can also, I have to be grounded. I have to take care of myself to do a good job. And then my work is being of service to these other individuals or teams or companies I work with. And then hopefully all the people they touch. As a leader of a business that's at scale, they're impacting many, many people's lives. And so to think about that when you're building and running a business is, to me, an important thing to hold as a part of this. And that is not the typical way we think of business, right? This is along the lines of stakeholder capitalism, which I think is the right one of the right directions to look. Or B Corps, another great example of one of the right directions to look. Or examples, I think you mentioned Holacracy, or Jack, who the founder of Twitter, just wrote about what he's doing at his company Square with using AI to help change how the company can be run in a different way. And I think we're, you know, there's movements and directions around how businesses operate, but they're often disconnected from this individual, personal kind of sense of like, what's the most important thing I could do? What are my values? Am I in integrity with those values? Am I allowing people to hold me accountable to those? Is my company held accountable? What does that look like? How do we build in that kind of a way? And so I think I'm going off topic from your main question. Oh, so I'll pause.
I think there's many things you just shared, but that's a really important distinction. When is enough? You know, I think, wow, we don't ask that enough, do we?
Never. Certainly not with
that. Yeah, exactly. So I think one of the things I'm hearing you talk about is kind of conscientiousness as well. Like, so that it's not enough just to, although it's important to think about what's the impact we want to have, but it's like a living question, really, to keep considering, am I in alignment with that sense? And in a way, that's what I hear you modeling as you talk about, you know, did I live into my love of and my commitment to evolutionary business, you know? Yep. So it's like you're modeling that inquiry. And I hear you saying that's important that leaders stay in that inquiry, you know, because we can slip, can't we? You know, I found that as Coaches Rising grew, you know, the pressures start to become different, payroll grows, and suddenly, you know, it's easy for different values to come to the foreground and you slip from first principles. So I'm hearing that, like, and then what I find beautiful is that it's not, you know, you need to really be considering, or there's an invitation to consider much more deeply the systemic kind of stakeholder impact. I'm thinking of people like Peter Hawkins, who even has questions like, you know, like, what are the our grandchildren, you know, or our grandchildren's children who haven't been born yet? What topic do they need us to focus on right now that's related to this business? You know,
yep.
Those kinds of perspectives, I think, are starting to come in more into business, which feels like part of this. It's a different view, isn't it?
Exactly. You know,
maybe it's the kind of that will become much more prolific. So how do you? So let's go deeper into it. So if you're doing this with leaders, you know, it sounds like you said I'm challenging leaders. You know, I've given them the kind of caveat. Hey, this is the, you know, kind of landscape, and you're working with purpose and conscientiousness, and what else do you find yourself really commonly doing that you think is in this realm of evolutionary business or, you know, helping organizations to scale?
As I said, I feel like we're in the early days. I do believe there's a broader movement that's been happening for a while, and it's gaining steam, I believe, and partly because of the suffering that people are more aware of now than they were in the past, or any time in the past. Like, we're always, it seems like we're a number of people are increasingly more aware. Not everybody, but there's certainly an increasing number of people more aware of all the suffering and all the possibility and the tools that it could take, at least individually, which is really the key thing. You asked where to start. We have to start with ourselves individually, each of us, and kind of decide what it is, what we can do. And, you know, I'm in a privileged spot where I can spend a lot of time doing that for a variety of reasons. And so then the question is, okay, so now I've done that. What else can I do with it, right? What can I do with it? What would be the most impactful thing? And so coaching is certainly one of those things. But I think there's other things for me, at least, I'm interested in. So one of those things is evolution as a company and how we operate. And again, it really hasn't been always the best example. It's certainly not been a straight line. It's been quite experimental and quite unconscious at times. And I would also say even not as conscientious as it should have been at times. And the great thing about it, though, is there's been awareness brought. There's an openness to getting feedback and giving feedback, which is another hallmark to me of an evolutionary business. And frankly, it could even be more broadly, you know, requested and received from other stakeholders besides internal folks, coaches and others inside of Evolution. And I think we could do even more, I'm sure, than we do. I'm sure if we had this conversation internally, people say, well, it's pretty good, but we could do more. I'm sure. And that's always the case, right? With us individually, as we do our work, I think that's true collectively, even in an organization and a company. And, you know, it's been very hard to build and run Evolution because it's not a typical business, because it wasn't set out to maximize or optimize around profit or growth. It was set out to be sustainable from the beginning, which is not easy to do. You're having similar experiences at Coaches Rising. And it's not an easy way to do it. If you're really thinking about all the different parts and the different people, it's tough. It's much easier just to think about, how do I make as much as possible? That's not always easy either, right? Most businesses that start fail even, you know, without being more conscious about their impact. But then when you're conscientious, it's really kind of difficult to add that in. So I do try to bring that into my coaching work, but I'm at the point where I feel like I need to go beyond that because I don't know if I'm not going to be able to touch as many people as I would like to just from that. I cannot coach more than a handful of people at a time. It's deep, intense work. I don't work just individually. I work in their systems. I sit in my clients' Slack workspaces. I communicate with many team members at a time. I'm more like a board member, as I said, where I'm really quite involved in their business and close and trying to support them, usually through the founder CEO or another kind of key exec. But that's my role. And so I don't have many clients. At Evolution, I have some influence, especially, you know, I'd say systemically on thinking about how we operate and some of the models we use that are unusual for, you know, our business. Like, we have an allocation model that we use to share revenues more transparently, more based on value versus on hierarchy of any kind. I think we're moving into even a less hierarchical kind of state of the company going forward. We've experimented with various forms of this over the years as we scaled, and what's the right size for Evolution and the right ways of kind of being in relationship with each other and working together with our clients and individually. And so there's a lot there, but again, it's small. And so my interest now is really trying to expand this by trying to put more of these ideas out into the world so that others who share these interests want to come together and connect those parts, that individual depth of everything like shadow and really personal responsibility and accountability and being on a personal journey to organizations and especially large systems and technology, including things like AI, blockchain, terms that a lot of folks are uncomfortable with or find evil. I think these things are very important that we need to embrace and figure out how we can best integrate and do it at massive scale. And so whether that's writing about it like I am now on Substack, on Evolutionary Business Blog, or a book that I'm hoping to put together, or speaking with you here, or hopefully others who want to be in touch, or even starting another business perhaps someday, or helping others start a business that could be maybe a, you know, imagine a very positive, enriching version of Meta. I don't think that's an it's possible to do something like that. I've had the belief that we could do something that's social, that's positive, without the types of algorithms that they use. It won't be very profitable probably, but what does that matter if you have the right people involved with it? And how you structure it. And maybe it'll take a lot longer too, it's possible. But that's the point. So how do we do things that are really gonna be enriching for the world? That's what I wanna see happen. And I can do some through coaching, but I probably will do some through other avenues as well.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, beautiful. And, you know, I see with Coaches Rising that we've walked this path of being led by a sense of purpose and impact. And I see how that slowed down our growth at times. You know, our focus on that over growth itself, we grew much more slowly. But I think there was more sustainability to it, and not just in terms of the performance of the business, but also how enjoyable it was. You know, that we didn't want to create something that just felt super stressful, you know, or kind of reached beyond where we were at. So, yeah, and I think this conversation for me kind of, one idea that comes is like, could we do a live call where we invited, you know, other coaches to join and have this be a kind of live conversation, you know, and hear what other voices are, there are in the field of people who are living this same question, the same tension, because it's a very generative tension, isn't it? It's an evolutionary tension. So, and you just named a few things. I'd love to go in the direction of, you know, you mentioned AI and evolution, your company as well. Could you say how has the kinds of offerings that Evolution creates evolved over time? You know, what do you find that the clients you work with personally and the Evolution works with really need in these times? And how is AI impacting the work that you do, the coaching that you do?
Yeah, great question. It's impacting it a lot. And I think that all coaches really need to find their place, their connection to it as much as possible if they want to do the most impactful work and be in the world. Of course, not everybody is going to, but that's just my personal view of it. So what's needed and how does AI fit? All dimensions, all levels, really. You know, as we say, the version we use of that is I, we, and it, the individual, intrapersonal, the we, the relational, interpersonal, and the it, the impersonal, the technical, functional, structural. All three of these are important in our work, and that's what clients need help with. They can't just have one of those things, in my experience. Maybe to start with one, but it really has to cover all three eventually. As coaches, most of us spend most of our time, I think, in the I and we dimensions, because those are the parts that the businesses do less of typically on their own. But I think the it, at least having the context for the it, if not impacting or working on the it, also are important. And so that means individual work, team, you know, or group work, and organizational work, whether it's in design or in culture or in systems and structures or in, you know, maybe something even broader, even getting into governance or strategy or things like pricing, whatever it might be. I think all these things are really valuable, and that's what companies need. And AI is making that even more so, both possible and to do as coaches, and also necessary as coaches to be working in. And I'll explain why. AI allows us to scale ourselves and be involved with things that we normally wouldn't be nearly as easily as coaches. It helps us to much more rapidly get information and use it to help us in our work. where we can be more human. We can use our intuition, our heart connection, all this without having to worry about taking notes or asking all the questions, because I can gather everything. I'm in my client Slack. I know what's going on in the company. I can use AI to help me get that information quickly. I can get a transcript of my coaching calls or meetings that I'm not a part of and use those in my understanding of what's happening in the company. I can have a much better sense of what's happening inside of the company than I could ever by doing surveys, even though just doing a 360 and doing interviews is so much easier and better these days because of AI as a coach. So on the side of coaching, it really can help us a lot, and it can allow us to scale ourselves and collectively together in our client work. On the other side, on the client side, they should be thinking about how they're going to reorganize their companies, because AI is going to make a tremendous difference in what's needed in terms of people. It's a very big change is happening or starting to happen. And I don't know if people realize how disruptive it's going to be in the short term. And I think, again, if you think about the purpose of business conventionally about profits, primarily in growth, we're going to see massive profit and growth happen, I think, in the near term. Then followed by hopefully not massive upheaval, because many people probably will not have work for a while, or will need to be looking for a new way of working, and then we'll hopefully find a balance. But in this time, again, just doing it from a conventional viewpoint of how we normally work as coaches, thinking about how they operate their business, how they can leverage, how they are leveraging AI, but thinking about then, therefore, what does it mean for how they work as teams and their organizations designed, and how they are managing agents as much as they're managing people in a lot of the companies I work with. It's a very different landscape that we're entering. It is more different than when the internet became a part of many companies' businesses. And we know what that did. And I think this is much more and much faster happening, as we see, than it ever was. That's why I said I think maybe we're at the apex of what's happening in conventional business, the speed.
Do you, I mean... Because there's a whole question here of like, what will AI and the change you just described, what impact will that have on this apex and the need for evolutionary business? Because in one way, it seems like AI is just like amping up even more, you know, this kind of like Silicon Valley kind of like, let's just take over the world and do it as fast as possible kind of. And you know, some of the voices there, I've seen them say things like, hey, you know, one guy I felt kind of irked by. He was like, he was speaking for humanity. That's the other thing. I was like, that's kind of bold. Like he said, I know humans. Humans don't care about listening to real music. That people will just listen to AI generated music. They already are. They won't care about it. And I thought that's a very particular view of the world that I don't agree with. But there's that whole conversation. What, I mean, obviously this question comes up and it's not the right question, but I still want to ask it, because what impact do you think it will have on the field of coaching? You know, because there seems to be a consensus that it won't replace coaching, it will support it. But I think obviously, as you described, the economic system that we've, you know, had for the last however many decades is going to be disrupted, and therefore, you know, paying coaches is going to be disrupted. What's your view on that?
I think there's multiple paths that will be taken in parallel or generally over the next period of time. It's already started. I think there's a divergence from a quality or experience or value perceived, that there's going to be an increase in coaches who are perceived in this way or present that type of value to their clients as being more valuable and likely to make potentially more income than they did for a variety of reasons. And then, unfortunately, I think there's a lot of people who probably are newer coaches who haven't found a way to really kind of build a practice. Maybe they were working through one of the bigger firms like BetterUp and haven't been paid that probably that well anyway. those people, I think, are going to really have trouble continuing unless they do something different, because I think AI can do a lot of the, what I would call kind of more straightforward coaching quite effectively, directly. So I think, you know, the thing that those people know, and now let me switch gears and say, however, I think at the same time, I think more people will come into coaching because of the disruption that's going to happen in a lot of jobs. And these are people who have a lot to offer in terms of experience that is not the same that AI can offer. A human and AI cannot offer another human the same thing. And so I think there will be an increase in the number of people at higher levels or broader levels of companies getting coaching and wanting better coaching and wanting that human connection, not just being happy with a check the box. Oh yeah, the HR department bought us some coaching, and so I'm just going to talk to whoever's available. No. My coach, that relationship we know as coaches who've been doing this for a while is incredibly important. And I think those people can move into coaching and do okay. Because again, I think the companies will become very profitable. I think they'll have fewer employees. And I think, you know, hopefully, maybe I'm being optimistic, that more of those people will have more good high-level coaching. And so there's a potential in the industry for folks like that. And that means experienced, whether it's as a coach or as an, you know, operator, depth of, you know, kind of connection to themselves that they can then bring to somebody else, so that that feels that that relationship is very valuable, and that they help the folks who are, you know, still in business navigate this very dynamic environment that we're going to be entering, which, as you said, is going extremely fast. And I think it's going to go even faster than we're seeing it yet. We barely started this process thus far. Thus far, it's like AI is like, you know, a better Google or something. That's not where AI is going. AI is going to do a lot of our work for us. And so instead of hiring humans to do it, we will be working with agents to do it.
There will be a lot of churn, you know. People like Yann LeCun, who's kind of a contrarian voice on LLMs, he's, you know, he said there'll be churn, but then there'll be a kind of period of coming back into a new level of stability around a new realms of work, you know. Yep. And I think we can't imagine yet what will emerge in our culture.
Yep.
And I think this is one of the things that I sit with is like, you know, and it's, you know, this has been said many times already, but the deeper questions of what it means to be human are so loud right now because of all the uncertainties we face and then AI coming in and replacing work. I think it's kind of like the gasoline on the fire of potentially moving. And I'm cautious here because it could go in many directions, but potentially a world where, you know, we've reclaimed some important values, you know, which are not like, hey, growth at all costs.
Exactly. We won't need it.
Et cetera. Exactly. We're now like, well, what's really meaningful, like contribution, service, like artistic expression.
That's right.
Relationship, you know, I'm hoping. And if people like Nate Hagans with his great simplification view, which is, you know, very sobering. And but, you know, he's also pointing in that direction, too.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people will feel relief about that.
I do, too.
You want to add anything?
Yes. Well, just let me add, I'm very optimistic about this. I think we have to, and realistic. I think it's going to be tough for some time for many people. And maybe that's an understatement, by the way, to say tough. I think very, very disruptive and challenging to many people's lives for a period of time. But I'm optimistic that we will, as a species, come out of this in a better place as a result of this. And it's necessary. It's part of our evolution. And if you think of, you know, Darwinism and kind of the survival of the fittest, the physical aspects of you know, humans and our brains being able to, you know, essentially go from, the apex species to the use of our intellects to create things like AI. That, to me, is a perfect example. Like, we went from this soulful creature that we are to being fully in our minds, creating something that's essentially a mind without a soul. That's AI. Technology has always felt to me like we're trying to replicate you know, what we think of as God. I don't think of it as God, but the idea of the Superman, right? And so we just keep getting more and more on that. It's faster and faster, and everything related to technology, the funding of it and the businesses built around it. And OpenAI is like the perfect example of like a company that lost its way. It was a, you know, nonprofit, and now look at it. And here yet, you know, but it's doing things that people are finding helpful, whether we agree with how they're doing it and whether they're ultimately going to be successful. But this is like, that's why I say it feels like the end of a period where we have to have like this almost like a, as a society, a breakdown. And I really hope it doesn't feel too painful for too many people. And that will then allow us, because of the technology, we have to go through it. We can't just like try to deny it. We can't stop data centers or things like this that people say they want to do. We have to go through it to then find a better peace, because I do think it will allow us to not care nearly as much about things like optimization of everything and growth for growth's sake. But it, like the economy will have to change, how people have enough to live, what living looks like. This is where the U.S., I think, is going to be especially challenging, because there's just no safety net in the United States like there is, say, in Europe, for example, and many other countries. And so, but I'm optimistic that we'll come through into a place where, because of AI, we'll be able to live and operate and work in very different ways, much more soulfully, much more creatively. The things that make us more human, we'll be able to really lean into. And I think, you know, part of why I want to bring out the conversation about evolutionary business and what it means to get there is because it's a human thing. It's not just a structural thing. And it's not just an individual, you know, exercise or a collective exercise in well-being. It's putting the organization and the human together in a different way of doing business. And AI can very much help that happen. It can make it way more, the parts that we've had to have human drudgery a part of can be automated and help us to be more human along kind of at the end of this process. And we can start doing that now, but it's going to be, you know, for existing companies and existing industries, it's going to be very, very tough time in between. But my hope is, have hope, lean into it. Don't try to stop it. It's not going to stop. And find the path through that's going to be most meaningful for you personally and for whatever organization you can be a part of or can touch, and help that path happen. And that's at least my hope.
Yeah. And I did a podcast with two coaches in the Ukraine, and they spoke about, of course, the, you know, tremendous challenge of living there and the, you know, the unforeseen, you know, I have to call it benefits or growth and ways that society and community came together, the sense of agency and innovation and creativity and community that came online, an adaptation, the adaptability, you know, and one of the guests even kind of off camera at the end kind of alluded to like, well, I mean, he didn't quite say it like this, but he's like kind of saying, like, am I happier now since, you know, like because it broke through the habituation and it the level of gratitude for small things and the sense of connection and vitality and aliveness that came through that. So, you know, it you know, of course, I wouldn't wish that on anyone, but it did give me a sense of a deep, powerful sense of inspiration about, you know that through adversity, we know this individually, through adversity, we often grow the most. And we look back on those moments and we say, like, at the time I hated it, but now I'm glad I went through that. So, and I wonder if I could ask you about the other side, which is, how do you use AI with your clients? You said, like, you know, transcribing conversations and I imagine that enables you to kind of do all kinds of things, from, you know, having it reflect on the patterns to suggesting areas of exploration. But how do you use AI to be a better coach? Like specific ways you do that?
Yes, I think so. You mentioned a couple of the what I would call basic ways of using it that I think are, you know, more and more common these days, of having, you know, transcribing sessions, and I do that with many of my clients, not all of them. The ones who are in the AI industry are the ones who least want me to do that, which is pretty interesting. And very carefully, by the way, you can't just do it without being thoughtful about where that information is going and how it's being stored and who's doing it. So I'd say, you know, thoughtfully capturing.
What do you use to do that in a way where it doesn't get kind of stored and, you know, taken in?
I'm not going to name a name here for a reason, just because I don't want to choose a side. I think, you know, being careful about there's I think more than one tool that's good that can be set up for users to gather confidential information, but then not have it stored in a cloud or outside of a company like our company's server access, basically, and then even individually beyond mine, so that it's confidential. It's like I'm basically taking notes. And I think, you know, that's important to kind of structure it that way. But it's very valuable. I'm not a coach who takes notes by hand normally during sessions. And normally, if I can do it the way I like, I think I told you this, I prefer to be on my phone walking around and not thinking and having to look at a screen, just being able to think and not look at a screen. And so writing notes also will take me out of what I feel like is my greatest gift as a coach, which is the sense of what, you know, to ask next or what I might say. And so having it transcribed though allows me to stay there without having to, but also capture the notes that I can share back with my client or have for myself. And also having AI, I can ask questions as things come up that might be helpful to me when I can't think of an idea, a book or an article or something else. I can ask it in, you know, kind of live. I can also capture, as I think I told you, I'm in a lot of my clients' Slack workspaces. I can use AI, whether it's in Slack or outside, to gather a lot of what's happening in the company and use that as context for my coaching, which, again, I don't think most coaches do this, but it's something I always do, which is I'm very involved with the companies I work with in terms of their businesses and understanding their strategies and what's happening inside the companies and all that. And I prefer to know that before I go into a session than have to find out about it or ask about it during a session. It's much more efficient to do this. So I use AI for that as well.
Do you use a special, again, you don't have to name it, but do you have an AI plug-in to Slack, mm-hmm. or does Slack have that
AI feature? Yeah, Slack has it. In the past, before Slack had it, we just used, you know, kind of what we were using, either Claude or OpenAI for this, ChatGPT. And I think, you know, gathering the information from a company and having it, you know, in a system that can then be queried, that's smart, is very valuable.
Yeah. How do you do that? You know, as someone who I'm, you know, self-interest here. I'm like, okay. we use Slack. And this is one of the things I found incredibly useful inside Coaches Rising is transcribing our team meetings, strategic meetings. Yep. And then, you know, over 10 meetings, it gets really in over 20. Then you start to the kind of meta patterns and
that's right.
Strategic scaffolding. And, you know, of course, just, you have to be careful not to get overwhelmed. But how do you do that with Slack?
Slack has its own AI tool built in that a lot of companies use that allows you to get summaries of what you missed. And so that's the simplest way. And if you don't have that, you can literally copy and paste into a folder or into a project in Claude or ChatGPT. We use Claude that can do the same thing for you. And so early days, that's what I was doing. Now I just use the Slack AI. It's nice. I just want to say when I first started using AI with coaching in the ways we're talking about, it was like game changing for me. And now it's just normal. And, you know, I used to send notes to my clients, but they all get their own notes now that are pretty good. I mean, my notes are different from theirs because I prompt my AI differently than they do probably. And so I share them, but I don't think they care as much because now they're getting good notes themselves. They're all recording everything. I don't even have to share it because they're all getting the transcript.
Exactly.
So it's just become the norm. I think where we're going is more interesting. At Evolution, we focus primarily so far on how the operation of the business works to support all of us, all of our partners, all of our coaches with operating, doing their work in the world so they don't have to be thinking about it as much. And it makes our you know, internal systems way better, way more efficient. We have much greater insight into what's happening in, you know, with our clients and with our contracts and these types of things. And we're moving into using that to have more collective intelligence without sharing any of the individual content that we coaches have with our clients, but gathering insights that we can then share with each other and use over time. And I think, you know, it's early days for some of this still, but I certainly see it in the operations of our business is far more efficient than, you know, would have been a year ago and or was a year ago. And that's the most amazing thing. And that allows us as coaches, again, to just focus on really the connection we have with our clients, with them, as whether it's a team or the whole organization. And so far, that's the most valuable use. I think going forward, what I'm really interested in kind of we're talking about is like, how is AI going to make a big difference in how those businesses are operating? And understanding that as a coach is more important than the other things I told you. So meaning using AI to think about, you know, how you operate as a as an entity, whether you're individual or part of a, you know, kind of an organization, and thinking about what how that organization's changing or could change as a result of AI. So personally getting very deep into how AI works and understanding it, and especially where it's going, is, I think, valuable for coaches because that's going to be the world we're moving. It is the world we're moving into now. And so understanding where the future is at least as important as where the current state is.
How do you, what sources do you use? Because it's obviously, you know, keeping up with the changes are challenging. I mean, you know, I'm thinking of like the Moonshots podcast with Peter Diamandis, and, you know, often has like quite vocal prime players in the AI industry on there. Yeah. Like what places do you go to?
I'm in the tech world, so I it's pretty easy for me, whether it's from, you know, podcasts like Jason Calacanis's like This Week in Startups or All In, which of course people have various viewpoints on because of the folks on that, or you know, reading different Substacks about it. It kind of fills my inbox and I kind of can't get away from it, to be honest. You know, so, you know, the last 2 months, OpenClaw and kind of the movement towards, you know, open source agents has been all the rage. And then what Anthropic's doing with Claude Code and Cowork, I think is really important. But the main thing is using it. I mean, I just, you have to like use it. You have to just make yourself use it and then learn from others how to use it even better and ask and get feedback. And we're lucky again because Dan, our CEO, is a technologist, and he was very early into using AI at his former company. And we have a team of experts working inside of Evolution who are leading us in this direction and building our infrastructure and our services and our products around it. And we're doing that now for clients as well. So we're now working in client systems, helping them using AI to integrate the work we're doing with those clients with their internal experiences of the work. So it's like how teams are performing, how organizations are performing, how leadership programs are moving, what topics should be kind of like addressed. I think we're moving into an age where we're going to be, as coaches, much more closely connected to the inner workings of a business. And again, primarily, initially, it's going to be about efficiency and effectiveness, those kind of common modern orange meme, you know, kind of frames that make companies more productive, more efficient, more profitable, and, you know, therefore probably have more value. That's primarily where it's going to go first. But, you know, I think as we do it, we're going to see opportunities to help the human parts of businesses get more out. And at some point, hopefully the what's enough question will be strong enough where people say, hey, we're doing so well, we can't do any better. We don't need so much. What can we do else that's going to be meaningful to society? And I think that possibility is right on the horizon. And then as coaches, if we're not just thinking about, okay, am I doing what my client needs? Am I making enough for my family? You know, am I being a good coach? Did I get my certification or whatever else that people care about? It's like, what more of an impact I can have on the world? That's the question I think we need to be talking about and asking. And what else do we need to do to help set that up? What else? And I think we need to be talking about the nature of business and how companies are structured and what systems they use and how they govern themselves. all these things, because that's the world we're going to move into, or we should move into, or I think we're going to move into, but we need to be talking about that, thinking about that, moving into that now, so it's not as disruptive as we shift.
Yeah, I could see if there is this abundance, enoughness, then that evokes that kind of focus on how else could I, what else could I give, what could I do for the world? Exactly. You know, it's, and another reflection is, at some point, if the AI gets smart enough that it's immediate, the impact of how it can help your business, you know, because right now it's like the technologists, the people who know how it works have got the cutting edge, you know, because, but at some point it could be you're talking to this AI that's so user friendly, and now you don't need that technological know-how. Now you're at the same level playing field as the other guys, you know? So then the question for me becomes, well, what's the differentiating factor in something, you know, is it the level of consciousness, the level of inspiration inside the human beings that create the thing? Because, it, you know, otherwise we could end up with, you know, like millions of businesses that are like just, you know, people are just building like replica businesses of others. And it's just kind of a deluge of dirge, you know, of like kind of
slop,
sameness. And yeah.
Anyway. I think there will be, right? We've seen that with the writing of AI generated writing and content. It's just like, oof. And yet where are people going? You know, back towards the more human version of it, right? And it's just not good enough to express ourselves, our uniqueness. And your point is well taken. And I do think I hope there are millions of businesses that come out of this, but they're not going to be all the same, I believe. At least the ones that will be interesting, they'll be more bespoke, more personal, right? More human.
Yeah.
That's kind of the point. They won't be machines. They will be like really crafts. And that's really cool. If I could have a craft that doesn't cost me too much to start and run, that's amazing. That's what a lot of people want to have.
Yeah, exactly. And all the things that people used to have to do to make a living that were the barriers to scaling a company are done. So now it comes back more and more to like, well, you have to give your gifts because... Yep. AI is doing everything else. You know?
Right. This is turning into an AI optimist utopia.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, I think it's good. I do find there's a number of coaches, unfortunately, who I think, you know, because of their, you know, kind of very human, you know, depth of relationship and connection, find it to be very, very worrisome and evil even as a technology. We hear that not just coaches, but a lot of people. And I think, you know, I understand why people feel that way. And I think it's very important for them to, first of all, be heard, but second, to also be, you know, shown that there's other possibilities. And hopefully they'll hear that. They'll see that there are. And it's not either bad or good. It's a tool. And it's how we're going to use it. And it's going to be used for bad and good. And that's just that's how everything has been with us humans, unfortunately. We have both of those parts in us, right? And so everything we do and create has those parts. And so, you know, but you know, we have to be aware of those, right? This is where the depth really comes in, and the awareness of self at a deep, deep level of understanding shadow, the parts we hide, repress, and deny, and putting those out in front of us, and then working towards them and having support around being accountable to these things, and then being out in the world with that, right? Not being monks, but, you know, no pun intended with your name, perfect name. But as you are bringing the work to the world in a way that it can touch as many people as possible that want to be touched, and hopefully are, you know, going to be open to having that. So that's why there is a possibility with this. I think there's also a similarly exciting possibility with blockchain, which is even crypto is seen as even, I think, maybe equally evil to AI. And again, it's just a tool. It's a technology, and it has been used for bad, and it has been used for good. And I also think it can be used extremely well for how to create evolutionary businesses with different types of more flexible structures and more democracy and sharing and transparency, all things we need. And that that's a whole nother, you know, kind of conversation we could have that also to me is exciting and hasn't yet been realized. And AI is similar. And we're at an earlier stage with AI's involvement in society than we already went through one with crypto, and it's not done. It's continuing. It's just less known, I think, at this point, or seen, where AI is really front and center. And it's impacting way more people than crypto has or blockchain has so far. But these technologies are all part of, you know, evolution and evolutionary business as humans and as, you know, as a species and as a society. And so embracing them, working with them, finding where they're good, finding where the shadow exists and why, you know, deeply understand. And look, if you don't like Sam Altman's way of leading his company or OpenAI and what they've done, then you can choose another one. And luckily there's more, right? Anthropic is a public benefit corp. We'll see how they are able to maintain that stance as they go public probably later this year, whether they can. It's not been done effectively in the past, in my experience. There's usually shareholder lawsuits happen shortly after anytime a stock price drops in those kinds of companies, because the structure is a bit limiting. And you know, it's not the ideal by itself. It shows, though, the kind of company, at least it seems, the leaders of that company want to create. Whereas OpenAI is, you know, far from that at this point, clearly a full profit company, if they can make it after spending as much as they are. And so you can choose a better path, or you can choose an open source model. And, you know, it's work. It takes time. We're still not there where it is super user friendly. And you do need to have some technological, at least openness. But you can ask the AI to teach you, which is pretty nice. How do I do this? And it will give you good instructions on how to do things. I set up Claude Cowork by asking Claude, how do I set up Claude Cowork? You know, it's pretty easy to do. And you can do that with coding as well. So I think, you know, this should be a positive kind of energizing of you. And yet, you know, at the same time, for me, it's easy to get excited and positive about the future. What's hard for me is to look at what I've done with the same kind of positivity. And instead, it's easier for me to say, gosh, I really haven't done what I wanted to. It's been 20 years since I had this vision of this you know, evolutionary business construct, framing, philosophy, movement, really. And again, it's not about me. It's just many others. I just, you know, named it that because it needed a name. And that's a whole another story we could talk about sometime of how it got that name, which is pretty funny. But we have to do more, don't we? I think we need to. You talk about a moral imperative. I think we need to do more here. And not just talk about it, though we should. Not just write about it, though we should. And please come to my, you know, Substack and give me feedback and engage and tell me when I'm wrong or dumb or where I'm in shadow, because that's what we all need. But building things together, building business, building structures and systems and, you know, better ways of working and organizing and all those things, because we need all of it. We need all the depth and all the breadth.
Beautiful. Well, it feels like a good place to bring it to a close. I mean, okay, there's so much richness in what we've shared today. Is there anything you want to share? I mean, I want to invite you to name your Substack and we can point people to your work, but is there anything you would like to share just as a close?
What comes to mind is, I'm not sure it's the best close, but I'll do it anyway because it comes to mind. And that is that I'm you know, privileged enough to be somebody who has strong views and can speak them relatively well, sometimes with, you know, going around and around a bit, but confidence, right? And I'm lucky, and, you know, it's part of just how I was raised and who I am. And at the same time, I am, you know, I'm here in large part because of the flaws that I recognize in myself and also the ones that I don't. And so my limitations are at least as great as my positive offerings. And I think that this isn't about me in any way, shape, or form. I really think it's about all of us working in a different, better way together. And, you know, I'm not super comfortable being out in front, and that's not the best version of me. That's why I'm a much better coach than I ever was a CEO. And I'm grateful that I've found that path. And I think That's the point. There's a place for all of us in this. And I don't know what that all is. I certainly don't have the answer. Sometimes I seem like I think I have all the answers. Part of me thinks I do, but I definitely don't. I know I don't. And I just want to say that with humility of like, this is not, there's no blueprint, there's no playbook, even the name Evolutionary Business is just a name. We can call it various other things. I'm pedantic about why that's the right name or a good name, let me say that. But that's my own issues. And the point is we're working on something together that's meaningful that we can talk about and actually make, you know, specific, you know, steps towards achieving a better thing. And it's not that there's some, once we get there, it'll be perfect. I think it's just a continuous evolution, improvement, growth towards something that is better. And I'm glad to have the chance to like be of service, hopefully. That would be my last piece, is I really hope this is of service. For me, it's more exciting than grounding, but I think that's great. I love having the chance to put myself out there, and I'll be nervous when I have to listen to it. And but I'm glad to have the chance, Joel. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's cool. Thanks, Jeff. Yeah. And you mentioned your Substack. What's that called?
Yeah, on Substack, it's called Evolutionary Business. I've only just started it, you know, so there's just a handful of posts so far on there, but I'm going to continue to do so. And I really welcome, obviously, people who are listening, who want to engage, to subscribe, to comment, to give feedback, to give your thoughts, to add them. Let's make this a dialogue. Community is where the real power is to do that. Check out evolution.team, our website for the company, and reach out, whether it's to me or to others there. We have amazing partners. And, you know, we're always interested in clients and coaches who want to be partnered with us and in our work and in the world and working together more fully. So, and anybody else who's interested, I love talking to people. And so I'm always open and interested to hear from folks.
Beautiful. Thanks.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this, and it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches, because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.